So once again, it's very nice to be with all of you again, the old and the new. It's very nice to see that the old have stayed, and there's some new people coming. I drove past your beautiful temple, which is manifesting. Last time I was here, it was the old building was still there. And you broke that down and cleaned everything away and built the foundation. And now that beautiful temple is manifesting your love and devotion for Srila Prabhupada and your beautiful deities under the very expert guidance of His Grace Hari Vilas Prabhu, my old friend from France. Thank you. Well, this is my first stop on my annual preaching tour. Not actually a preaching tour, it's more like a fundraising tour, but you don't want to say that in public. This is my first stop, Seattle. We always stop here because I have two very beloved disciples, Govinda Charan and Rasika Siromani Dasi, and they act as my secretaries in this great country of America, and they organize my tour throughout this country, so it's only befitting that I start here, although Rasika is complaining it's only 2.5 days. It's the shortest stop anywhere, but it's a big country. We have a lot of places to cover, things to do, places to go, people to see, as they say. But happy we're here. And apart from the normal Bhagavatam classes that we'll be giving as we travel around, obviously there'll be different cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam as we travel around the country, I thought, particularly in the evenings, I would lecture from, a poem which Srila Prabhupada wrote in the 1950s, which I'm sure probably everyone is unfamiliar with. I was unfamiliar with it. I did know of its existence, but I never actually read it in full. It's a little hard when the children are making so much noise. That was quick. This is a poem which Srila Prabhupada wrote when he retired from family life. I don't know the exact year, but I know it was in probably the mid-1950s. And he went to Vrindavan as a new sannyasi, and there he began his preparations for coming to the Western countries to ignite the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the order of his spiritual master. So when Srila Prabhupada arrived there in Vrindavan, of course we know from reading Prabhupada Lilamrita, he was a typical renunciate in that he was penniless and was depending only on the mercy of the Supreme Lord, Sisi Radha and Krishna. And he wrote a poem, as he did it, very significant moments in his life. For example, when he left Vrindavan and went to America, he wrote a poem on the Jaladuta. And just before arriving in America, before making the port, he also wrote another poem. And these poems are historical, actually, in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. As members of this movement, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we actually take those poems as good as Shastra. This is stated actually by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that the writings of pure devotees, Annibilasata Sunyam Jnana Karma Narvitam Anukalena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhaktir Uttama, those devotees who have no tinge of any selfish material desires in their hearts, and their only desire is to serve Krishna, their realizations, which they either speak or put to pen, there's good as the Shastra. So we have our Vedic literatures, we have the four Vedas, and we have the Itihashas, and we have the Upanishads, and we have so many categories, ancient scriptures. But we're blessed in the realizations and the writings of great devotees who comment upon those ancient teachings, help us understand them according to time, place, and circumstance. So Śrīla Prabhupāda wrote this very beautiful bhajan. You could say prayers from the heart. At this great milestone in his life, what is a milestone? Actually, we're not so familiar with milestones because now we have signs and things like that, big signs which give you a direction where to go here in America, all over the world. But in days of yore, there were no billboards. And to help the traveler on his journey, there would be actual stones. We still see this in Europe. Different parts of Europe will be taking a hike somewhere with the devotees going out in the country, and we'll come across a big stone. It'll have a little arrow or it'll have a number or something. And it was put there centuries ago to give travelers an idea of where they were. You come to a milestone. Every mile there might be a stone like this. Significant part of the journey to give you direction where to go. Even in India, they have like that. Now they're disappearing because material progress is wiping all that ancient culture out. But even on the road from Delhi to Vrindavan, you may have noticed these tall kind of like pinnacle cone structures. If you look carefully and you on the road, that Delhi-Agra road, still now you can see two or three are left. In the 70s, I know there were many, but now they're tearing them all down. I don't know what they're doing with them. But they gave some indication, yes, you're on the right path, keep going. A milestone at an important junction in the journey. So it's been brought into the English language, milestone, an important junction in your life, a milestone in your life when you're born, when you start school, when you graduate, when you get married, when you have your first child, when you retire, and when you die. These are, you could say, significant moments in your life. So here we have Vrindavan Bhajan, a very significant moment in the life of a pure devotee. When he retired completely from all material activity, of course we know Śrīla Prabhupāda did say one time, there was never a time when he forgot the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. But pure devotees' lives are very interesting because they teach us both by their words and by their deeds. They teach us common folk how to pick up, how to start the process of Krishna consciousness at any point in our lives. You can say there was no need for Prabhupada to go to school and to work and to get married. He didn't have any interest in these things, and his only desire was devotional service to the Lord. But he took up these common activities and taught us how to make them Krishna conscious. He coined that phrase, dovetailed. If you're out preaching in the world and you use the word dovetailed, people are like, what? Dovetailed? It's actually an old English word, because the British were in England, or the British were in India. A lot of Indian English is like the old British English. So dovetailed. What is dovetailed? Many times I say dovetailed, people, excuse me, sir, what does dovetailed mean? It means dovetailed. Whereas Narada Muni told Śrīla Vyāsadeva, it is not the thing which caused the disease, when used in a therapeutic way, cure the disease. And Prabhupada gives the analogy of milk, that milk in the summertime in India, if you remember. It's very hot in India in the summertime, and milk heats the body. So if you drink too much milk in the hot season, which is, we're getting into it now, April, May, June, July, then monsoon comes. But if you drink too much milk, the body becomes overheated and you get diarrhea. What is the Ayurvedic cure for diarrhea? You take yogurt, a little banana. You take yogurt, which is simply milk transformed by tamarind. Same substance, but little transformation. You take yogurt. Yogurt cools the body. And by cooling the body, the dysentery goes away. A nice analogy. Doesn't the thing which caused the disease, when used in a therapeutic way, medicinal way, cure the disease? This was Narada Muni, the spiritual master of Srila Vyasadeva, part of his teachings in the first canto. So those things which cause our bondage in this world, if we dovetail them, if we use them in the service of the Lord, not for our personal interests, but to please Krishna through our education, through our career, through our working together as a family to please the Lord, those things which cause our very bondage, they become the source of our liberation or ultimately our devotion to Krishna. So pure devotees, it appears they're like common folk. No. Prabhupada told my godbrother Bhavananda one time. They had come from Kenya, from Nairobi, Kenya. They'd come to back to India. And in that part of the world, you need a yellow fever vaccination. I've had two or three. Every 10 years, you have to get them. Because yellow fever is very prominent in that part of Africa, near the equator. So when you leave and you come back to a country, you've been to Africa? Do you have a yellow fever vaccination? Because if a mosquito bites you and bites, you have the disease. If a mosquito bites you and bites somebody else, they get the disease. So they're very careful in India. So they came back, and the immigration officials asked Srila Prabhupada, you've come from Kenya? Where is your yellow fever vaccination certificate? And Prabhupada turned to Bhavananda, and Bhavananda had forgot it in Nairobi. So the officer, sorry, you have to stay for some time in, what do they call that?
Quarantine.
You have to go into quarantine for 15 days. Prabhupada had a very busy schedule. With a little negligence on the part of his disciple, Prabhupada was so inconvenienced. For 15 days, he was in that special part of the hospital. I can imagine it wasn't very nice. And after about a week, Prabhupada was in a rocking chair on some porch looking out. It was a fenced-in area. Evening time, he said to Bhavananda Das, he said, "I did not want to come to this nasty place." And Bhavananda felt very bad. "Oh, I'm so sorry, Srila Prabhupada. I forgot that yellow fever certificate." Prabhupada said, "No, I mean this material world." So Bhavananda moved a little closer because he could see it was one of those rare moments where you could get a glimpse into the life of Srila Prabhupada when he spoke about his personal history. Because generally pure devotees, they only speak about Krishna. They don't consider themselves very significant. It was really hard to get information from Srila Prabhupada about his previous life, or his life before he came to the West. That part of the Bhagavatam, there's only a few pages. They're very humble, great souls. They don't want any glorification of every minute, just Krishna, 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 Krishna. But here it appeared there was some glimpse, those rare moments. Bhavananda said, "Krishna, you didn't want to come to this material world." Baba said, "No, but Krishna ordered me to come." Well, then he even came closer. Bhavananda, "He ordered you to come." "Yes, Krishna ordered it. But I told him that I'm not very inclined towards austerities." "And the Lord told me, no, don't you worry. You just go down to the material world and you preach Krishna consciousness. You distribute books about the science of Krishna consciousness, and I'll take care of everything else. So on the order of the Lord, Prabhupada came. Gaur Govinda Maharaj, he was giving a lecture one time in Budapest, Hungary, that I attended. He was also a very special devotee, a great loss. Many times, even in the material world, great persons are appreciated only after they leave. He's one such devotee, how much he had to offer. He said, there's two types of souls who come from the spiritual world. One who comes of his own accord, out of his infinite compassion. It appears that in the spiritual world, the souls there are aware of our condition, our conditioning in this world. It's good to know that somebody's got your back, as they say in American language. He's got my back. Good to know that there's someone who's concerned about us, even though we don't think we're so bad off. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj said, and there's souls who are ordered by the Lord to come to the material world to reclaim their lost brothers and sisters. So it appears that Srila Prabhupada has come from that category. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed, as he was growing older, he was concerned about that his preaching would continue. So he prayed to Lord Chaitanya to please send someone from his personal camp to come into his home. In other words, he was planning to have another child. You send someone from your personal camp, aide-de-camp we call that in French, l'aide-de-camp, one of your personal servants. So Prabhupada's like that. One time a devotee asked Prabhupada, who are you in the spiritual world? Prabhupada said, if I told you, you would faint. One time Prabhupada, Bhavananda told me this story because I was in Australia recently. He said Prabhupada was very ill one time, and sometimes when you're ill, you become very pale and weak and pale. And Prabhupada, after some time of the illness, he came better and came into his where he's going to take prasadam. And he told Bhavananda, oh, I'm feeling better. You can see my skin color, this yellow-gold color, he said. And Bhavananda said, oh, yes, you're looking healthy. And Prabhupada said, yes, this yellow-gold color, this is my color in the spiritual world. Whoa. So Bhavananda looked in the nectar of devotion for all the personalities. It describes their mood, their service, and sometimes the color of their body. So they're very kind, these great souls. They come and they teach not only by their preaching, but they teach by example. There's a saying that example is even higher than precept. You have the philosophy, but okay, but we need someone to show us how to live the philosophy. And that is the spiritual master. The spiritual master is conversant with the philosophy, and he, by his example, by his actions, he teaches us how to put the philosophy into practice. So here in this Vrindavan Bhajan, we we're introduced to Srila Prabhupada at this milestone in his life where he's renounced material life altogether. He didn't have to renounce it because he was never attached to anything in this world. But again, for our example, a very important juncture in anyone's life, he's renouncing the material life altogether and coming to Vrindavan to prepare himself for his mission, which was given to him by his spiritual master at their first meeting. The very first meeting, when Prabhupada was offering his obeisances to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, even before he finished his obeisances, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you look like an intelligent young man. Why don't you preach the message of Lord Chaitanya in the English-speaking world. And after that meeting, Prabhupada's friend, who invited him to that program, he asked Prabhupada what he thought of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada said, I have met a genuine sadhu. Because you know, in India, there's the sadhus and there's the pseudo-sadhus. And Prabhupada had seen both. And later he said, I accepted him as my spiritual master from the very first meeting. So he received his instruction to preach. But Prabhupada was not irresponsible. At that time, he just entered grihastha life, married life. And he raised the family as best he could. Things didn't work out so well. His business failed. Although an astrologer was called in at Prabhupada's birth, and he noted that he would be one of the wealthiest men in India. And he also noted that he would go overseas and establish 108 temples of the Lord. But it's interesting that he was destined to be one of the wealthiest persons in India, but his business failed. So, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says to Yudhishthira that my first mercy upon my sincere devotee is that I take everything away from him so the poor fool has no other recourse than to take shelter of my lotus feet. So how is it that that astrological prediction didn't come true? Well, that can be understood in a statement by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was a very good astrologer, actually. I've heard that he was the best astrologer of his time. But when he would sometimes travel in the moths and he would see a young brahmachari, he would take his hand and he'd look at the lines in his hand like that. He would sometimes say, so you get married. you stay brahmachari. He's so expert. He's brilliant. And astrology is all about mathematics and different. So, but at one point he gave it all up. Although it is useful to some extent in Krishna consciousness, because it's a valid Vedic anga, limb of Vedic culture. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave it up. He said, why? Because it does not take into consideration the will of Krishna. Krishna's will. Eighth canto, there's a nice statement that Prabhupada writes that even though one may be destined to die at a certain point, it's in a purport, if Krishna desires, the devotee can live longer for service. So the prediction was that Prabhupada would become one of the wealthiest men, but then he became one of the poorest people. And hindsight is better than foresight. We can understand that the Lord had a higher purpose for his pure devotee, and that was to spread the message of Lord Chaitanya all over the world. So his household life didn't work out so well. Actually, his business failed, and his wife wasn't so inclined towards Krishna consciousness. She never took initiation. It was never said that she was inimical. She was obviously pious. But we hear the famous story how she took the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's Bhagavatam at one point, and took it to the market and sold it so she could get biscuits for her tea. And one time Prabhupada said, it's either the tea and the biscuits or me. So she said in a half-joking way, well, I'll take the tea and the biscuits. And Prabhupada took advantage of that to leave. But that cannot be condemned because he gave up the smaller family for the greater family. This is actually sannyas. Sannyas isn't a life of irresponsibility and just, it's a life of responsibility. Sannyas, vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gave hastani sunichaiva sapakicha pandita samadarshana. A learned person he sees with equal vision, a learned and gentle brahmana, a hasti, an elephant, a cow, a dog, or a dog eater, he sees them all equally. He doesn't see the body, he sees the spark of life, the force, he sees the soul within, and he sees all souls as brothers and sisters because they have one common father. If you're brother or sister, it means you have the same father. Krishna said he's the seed-giving father of all living entities. So one who's in the renounced order of life, who's renounced material life and is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, this is supposed to be his vision, that he has as much affection for all living entities as he previously had for his family members. And you know how strong is the affection for family members. There was one sociology, one person who was studying society, the dealings of human beings, they said the prime motivating factor in all human activity is the affection for wife and children. A man works hard to maintain his family, and society is composed of so many families. So the prime motivating factor is our affection for our family members. That's why we get our that's why we study, we get our career, and we work so hard, because of our affection for our wife and children, or our husband and children. This is the prime motivating factor in human society. And you know how strong those sentiments are for family members. But ultimately, our original family is a Krishna conscious family, because these family relationships are temporary. They're here today, gone tomorrow, but the relationship with the Lord and his devotees, that is something eternal. So a sannyasi should understand that, at least that, and he should demonstrate the same affection that for every living entity. He should have the same concern for anyone he meets as he previously had for his wife, or his son, or his daughter. It's very exalted. There's that story of Magrari. I mean, we've heard it 100 times and we've seen the play 1,000 times at the Sunday feast, but it's actually quite deep. That by the mercy of Narada Muni, Magrari, who was a hunter who took pleasure in half-killing animals, not just killing them, but half-killing them, seeing them suffer and then skinning them, such a wretch. By the mercy of his spiritual master, he eventually had very deep concern for those same living entities, because after he was convinced by Narada to give up that horrible activity and to sit and to chant Hare Krishna, to begin to make tangible progress by sitting in one place and chanting before the Tulsi tree, just depending on the local villagers to bring him food, after 1 year, Narada came back to that same region with Agastya Muni, and when Magrari saw his spiritual master, he came running to greet him, which is the custom. But he stopped halfway, and Agastya said, "What kind of disciple is this? He's just not even coming forward to offer his obeisances." So they were walking towards him, and they saw there was a line of ants there. And he'd become so advanced that this person who was half killing, he wouldn't even risk stepping on an ant. So it's a simple play. We present it to the general public, but actually very deep. Same affection that one has for family members, a renounced person has for all living entities. So the sannyasi, he gives up the immediate family for the greater family. Therefore, he cannot be criticized. Although there's some risk for the family members. There's obviously a risk. Women in particular should always be protected in Vedic culture. in her youth by her a father, and she reaches mature age by her husband, and the event of the death of her husband by her her eldest son. So when a man leaves the woman unprotected, there's some risk there. Ramanujacharya, the great acharya of the Sri Sampradaya, he was contemplating sannyas, but he was thinking, how will I leave my family? He actually, historically, he had a young wife and two young children. He was thinking that I should leave to take up this preaching, because at that time Mayavad philosophy was overwhelming India. But he was anxious. Well, I can't be irresponsible and just leave my family. Who will maintain them? And he looked up on the ledge, and there was a mother lizard who had several little babies that just hatched. And one of the babies, by the arrangement of the Lord, fell off the ledge onto the ground. And it scared the mother and the other lizards away. And then Ramanujacharya, he saw this lizard all alone, defenseless, helpless, hopeless. He's thinking, how will he eat? And suddenly one little fly, just appropriate size, came and landed in front of that lizard, and that little lizard stuck out his tongue and ate the fly. Nitya nityanam chaitanas chaitananam ekubahanam yovadi dati kumam. Upanishad say that out of all the living entities, there is one, eternal living entities, there is one who's maintaining all the other living entities, making the arrangements. So he saw this. He's separated from his family. Lord has made an arrangement for him to eat, so Lord will make an arrangement for my family. And he left. He took sannyas. So Prabhupada also left, you could say, at an untimely moment, because one of his daughters was not yet married. Prabhupada mentioned one time that he was, when his daughters reached maturity, in India generally, in those days the girls would be married at 12 or 13 or 14. And if they were not married by then, it was considered socially unacceptable. And Prabhupada's wife was hassling him that this young girl is not married yet. It was a great pressure on Prabhupada. But he actually left before that girl, and that daughter actually never married. She went when Prabhupada took sannyas. Then his wife eventually went to live in another place in Calcutta. That daughter never married and stayed with Prabhupada's wife for a long time. I think recently she passed away. So one could say, oh, this is not responsible. But for the higher good, for the higher purpose of enlightening the other family members, we're all one spiritual family, one father, seed-giving father of all living entities. Prabhupada renounced that, and he retired to Vrindavan. Why Vrindavan? Because Vrindavan is the perfect place to retire. Not to retire to become inactive, but to retire to become active in the service of the Lord. This is the difference between Mayavad sannyas and Vaishnava. Mayavadis generally retire and don't do much, but try to become God. But a Vaishnava, he becomes very active in the service of the Lord. So Prabhupada retired to the perfect place, Vrindavan. It said that Lord Chaitanya came to teach specifically that the Vrindavan is the highest abode of the Lord, and the residents of Vrindavan are the greatest devotees of the Lord because of their pure devotion, even greater than Vaikuntha, which is the official kingdom of God, where the Lord is worshipped in awe and reverence, intimate, sweet, loving mood of the Brajbasis. And of all the Brajbasis, the gopis' love for Krishna is the best, it is the pure. So it's the best place to be born, it's the best place to live, and Vrindavan is the best place to die. So to prepare himself for that paramount mission of going to the Western countries, what a challenge. to transplant Vedic culture in the West. Not a very fertile place to plant a seed. If you want to plant a seed, you don't plant it in the Mojave Desert. What's it called? Mojave Desert. I forget. Mojave, right? Mojave. You don't plant a seed in the Mojave Desert. You plant it in Ukraine. That Ukraine is called the breadbasket of Europe. I'm amazed when I travel there. Especially you travel in the southern parts of Ukraine, where they're growing everything. The earth is black, that very rich black earth. You throw a seed there, whoop, it grows without even like cultivating it. The same three seed you throw in the Mojave Desert, it's just burned to a crisp. So to plant the seed of Krishna consciousness in the barren West, where people have little interest in these things, they're difficult. So probably had to prepare himself. Sadhguru Maharaj aptly called that first volume of Prabhupada Lilamrita, he called it a lifetime in preparation. Whole summary up till when Prabhupada left in the Jaladuta. That's like one book, I think. And then there's so many other volumes of that. But a lifetime in preparation. So this great milestone in Prabhupada's life when he'd renounced family life, renounced his work, renounced everything to prepare his mission. He goes to Vrindavan in that sanctified, pure atmosphere. He prepares himself. Not that he, you know, went out and bought a bag and, you know, got some, you know, medicine and some new clothes. Not that type of preparation. But the deeper preparation of being, as he once coined the phrase, preaching is the essence, books are the basis, utility is the principle, but purity is the force. The devotee is meant to be the transparent via medium of the Lord's message. If you pass light through a blue plastic, you get some light, but it's, you know, it's dark blue, you can't read by it. If you pass it through red plastic cover, like they cover the light sometimes, a little more light. But you pass it through a clear, you get the full potency of the light. So a devotee has to purify himself. He has to come from the mode of ignorance to passion to goodness to sudhasattva. It takes a lot of work. You have to work on yourself to become a valuable instrument in the hands of your spiritual master. So although Prabhupada needed nothing of the sort, again, because he never forgot the lotus feet of Krishna, he went to Vrindavan, the perfect place for a devotee to learn to fully depend upon the Lord, to be imbued with Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said he eventually ended up at the Radha Damodar temple, and he used to look out his window at the samadhi of Rupa Goswami to gain inspiration. You know, those of you who have been there, such an inspirational place. Prabhupada said one time, people go to New York, they go to London to get educated, they go to Paris to enjoy. But if you want Krishna consciousness, you have to go to Vrindavan or Mayapur or Jagannath Puri. Even neophyte devotees have little understanding of the potency of that transcendental place. They go there and they feel something. This is a special place. Prabhupada, when he first went to Vrindavan, he said, I was expecting the Lord to jump out behind every bush. He heard so much about Vrindavan. There's no difference between Goloka Vrindavan and Gokul Vrindavan. There's none different. It's the spiritual world manifest on the material plane. Only a thin film of illusion covering the Dham, so that the gross materialists don't come there and live and the Mayavadis stay away. You can go, and if you're not sincere, if you're not serious, if you're not striving for Krishna, you may become disappointed because of all the new buildings coming up, because of the open sewers, because of the garbage. I recently took Polish national television on a tour of India. We came to Vrindavan. They were so disappointed. So much garbage everywhere. Everybody wants money. It's filthy. There's pigs. There's dogs. There's disease. We took them to the temples, and I had them bathe in Radhakund. Well, that was difficult. Push away all the green algae. What do I get out of this? All your sins will be destroyed. I'm a sinner, okay. Anyway, when they came back to Europe and they were almost back to Warsaw, my secretary, Nandini Dasi, she said, "So, what do you think, Yurik, about your trip to India?" And he said, "Well, I'll tell you confidentially that at the end of my life," this was, you know, a big producer in Polish television, big beer drinker, very powerful man in the country, and famous humanitarian, actually. Not a devotee. He said after that trip to Vrindavan, he said, "At the end of my life, I want to retire to Vrindavan and become a devotee." And she was like stunned. "What did you say?" He said, "No, there's something special there about Vrindavan." Act of Devotion says if you go there and you spend one fortnight, I think a fortnight's like 2 weeks, then you count it in as a devotee of the Lord, eternal associate of the Lord or something. And each time we go, a little bit of the crust wears away and we begin to perceive more and appreciate more. But if you're a pure devotee, you don't see the film of Maya. You see the Lord in his uppercut, his unmanifest pastime. And Krishna never left Vrindavan. Don't think he ever left Vrindavan. He's too much controlled by the love of the Brajbasis to ever leave. When he went to Mathura and he got to that demarcation zone between the line between, they call it Vishramghat, the place where Vrindavan and then there's the region of Mathura, then he expanded his Vasudev feature, Balaram and Shankarshan, and they left on the, they continued on the way in the chariot. Krishna never left Vrindavan. He expanded as Vasudev and Shankarshan, and then he was there, but in his unmanifest form. But if you have the eyes to see, Premanjani Charity Bhakti Vilo Chinena, if you have the eyes to see, if your eyes are covered with the salve of love, you can see the Lord's pastimes taking place now as they were 5,000 years, because there's no difference. It's an eternal Dham. But if you have the speck in the eye of material enjoyment, you'll see the pigs and the rickshawwalas and the sewers. But if you have Shraddha, if you have faith in the words of Guru and Krishna, you'll see, but not with these eyes. You'll see with your ears. You'll see with knowledge. It's a good start. Yasya devi para bhaktir, yatta devi tata guru. One has faith in the instructions of a spiritual master in Krishna, the full purport of Vedic knowledge is revealed. So we're also seeing, we're not seeing yet like the purity of it, but we're seeing through knowledge, because we accept the authority is giving, we're also seeing. So we push it aside, the garbage and the Jamuna and Radhakund, and we take our baths with full faith. Yamuna Mayi Ki Jai, Radhakund Ki Jai. We take our bath and we feel the purification. And if you go long enough, as much as you can in this lifetime, some genuine purification will come. Some appreciation for Vrindavan Dham will be there. If it's not special, why have so many acharyas gone there and lived and died there? There's so many samadhis, the six Goswamis, and Srinivasacharya, his daughter, Hemlata Goswamini, she's there. Gangamata Goswami. So many. Okay, actually, her samadhi is in Puri. But these places are transcendental. So to prepare himself, Prabhupada went there. Penniless. And this poem which he wrote, 22 verses, this is an introduction tonight. This poem, Vrindavan Bhajan, is his realizations at that stage of his life. Wow, what nectar. It is said that one should not try to understand the mind of a pure devotee. It's too deep, it's fathomless, it's too confidential for an aspiring devotee to understand, will maybe misunderstand. Just like there's a samadhi called the Granth Samadhi in Vrindavan at the Samadhi Mandir of Sanatana Goswami at Madan Mohan Temple. That Granth Samadhi, Samadhi means the place where the burial, Granth means scripture, Granthara Shrimad Bhagavatam. We glorify the Bhagavad, the king of all scriptures, Raj, Granthara Shrimad Bhagavatam. This is the Granth Samadhi. All the literatures of the six Goswamis are in that tomb. But no one can open it. Because some of those writings are so confidential, they would bewilder the mind of anyone but a pure devotee of the Lord. Too confident, too deep, too esoteric. We were not meant to hear that yet. Long time coming. But there. So the mind of a pure devotee of the Lord, you shouldn't try to understand his mind. Just follow his instructions. So advanced. And here, in this Vrindavan Bhajan, one of the first writings of His Divine Grace, at this milestone of his life where he's given up all material, preparing for his mission, we get a very deep insight into his heart. The mind and the heart are synonymous. We're looking into the heart of Śrīla Prabhupāda. He's allowing it because he's writing it. Mataji, the children are really hard to hear. I mean, easy to hear them, that's the problem. We're looking into the heart, we get a look into the heart. Prabhupada's allowing us to look into his heart to prepare us when we also take sannyas, leave this world and prepare for the mission. Not that a very few will take sannyas, but at one point we all have to leave the world anyway. At one point everything will be taken away and we have to be fully dependent on Krishna. If you're everything is being taken away and you're attached to Krishna, you have nothing to fear. Dearest tata namuyanti, dehi no smin yata dehe, kovanam yovanam jara, tatate antaraspapir, dearest tata namuyanti. That the body is changing and moment of death is coming, but dearest tata namuyanti, one who is dearer, one who is sober, he's not bewildered by such a change. What to speak of a devotee who's fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, just going on to another service, he's joyful. Come on, death. Like Dhruva. When death came, Dhruva stood in the head of death himself, who was paying obeisances because he was such a great devotee, and I stepped in the head of death into the Vaikuntha airplane to go back to Godhead. So we had to be prepared, otherwise we will be fearless. When everything is taken away, and don't have anything to hold on to, that's fear. But if your service to the Lord is there, you have nothing to fear. Rather you say, yes, come on. Let this old, useless body, which is a sign of my rebellion against the Lord, take it! Get rid of it, yuck! Let me take up something genuine service to this. This is an obstacle, this body. Take it. But unless you have that understanding, it can be very fearful. So this is meant for us to hear how Prabhupada, these are his thoughts, his reflections on giving up family life, his reflections on giving up his business, everything being taken away. This is Prabhupada's reflection on that particular point of his life and how he's expecting to see Krishna in Vrindavan. This is the mood of this poem, Vrindavan Bhajan. It has two parts. Like Brihat Bhagavatamrita, I hope you've read, has two parts. So this Vrindavan Bhajan, reflections of Prabhupada in his mid-50s as he's ready to go to America, so kindly revealing his heart, his mind, has two parts. Reflections on being forced to give up material life, we're also going to be in that position at some point. And number two, trying to see Krishna, that the will of the Lord in his life, we also looking for that. How's the Lord in my life? This is the mood of Vrindavan Bhajan. Therefore, I thought that we would read. So it's late, but we'll read at least the translation now. And then tomorrow evening, we'll comment, by if with Prabhupada's permission on his very deep thought. So this is, there's 22 verses in this poem, and this is verse number 1. My dear Lord Krishna, as I sit here alone in your holy abode of Vrindavan Dham, absorbed in the following thoughts and meditations, kindly appear before me. I have a wife, son, daughter, grandchildren, and everything, but since now I am without any wealth, everything is considered a failure. All these so-called opulences are now simply sources of frustration. My dear Lord Krishna, you also kindly revealed to me the naked form of your material energy. And today, by your causeless mercy, I have finally lost all taste for material enjoyment. As you, my Lord, have stated, Yashaham anugrinami harisheta danam shanai. If I specially favor anybody, then I take away all his sources of income. But have I really properly understood how you, the all-merciful Lord, have bestowed this causeless mercy upon me? We'll continue tomorrow night. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Vrindavan Dhamma ki, Seattle Yatra ki, Hari Vilas Prabhu ki, Gaur Premanandi, Hare Krishna.